Paz IM Radio with your co-hosts Robert Brining and Aaron Laxton. We go around the world and across the United States. Join in the conversation by calling in to 929-477-3572. That's 929-477-3572. This week, we have your HIV scoop with Josh Robbins and your positive message from Rise Up to HIV and Kevin Maloney. Your weekly dose of hope. Paz IM Radio. I hope you're ready for season two because it starts now.
Happy Sunday afternoon, everybody. Today is January the 15th, 2017. We are less than 1 week away from the end of the world, or as I like to call it, I am Aaron Laxton, along with Robert Bryan. How are you doing, Robert?
Oh, I'm doing well. I am doing well. It is nice and cold here, but it's kind of icy up where you are from what I gather from the weather forecast.
Yeah, we've been in the middle of hashtag ice apocalypse 2017, and everything shuts down whenever we have a drop of snow or ice or anything like that. So I have been operating from home, and I've just really been catching up on a lot of Netflix and stuff like that. Other than the news, I don't want to watch about the news.
What are you Netflixing? I must know.
So, all right, you're gonna judge me. Please don't judge me. But there's a show on there called Highway Through Hell, and it is all about tow trucks, in the Coquihalla Highway up in Alberta and British Columbia. And I don't know why I love watching this show, but it's about heavy equipment rescue and tow trucks.
And is that up on ice?
It is up on ice. Yeah. So that's,
okay, I know what you're talking about, but I won't judge you as long as you don't judge me.
Okay.
What I love to watch is the border security. There's the Canadian border, the Australian border, and the United States border, and they have people coming in, and they have all the police officers and all the people who are trying to figure out drugs get smuggled through the airplane, through the mail, you know what I mean? And
it's right
for me, it's interesting, and learning about how people have to get different kind of visas to come here, and how they can reject you for being a drug user or being in jail for over 12 months, you're not eligible to enter certain countries. Yes. Yes, that is true. But that's my kind of little thing.
I've kind of,
I don't know why.
Things, but that's kind of been my thing. There's a couple other shows. I'll have to check that out. When I was a kid, I was on Puffs all the time. And all those little shows, because I used to want to be a highway patrolman. And so when I was a kid, I think I'm a little bit older than you maybe, but Chips, I used to stay home from school so I could watch Chips, because it came on during the day.
Chips.
California Highway Patrol. It was Poncherelli and John or whatever. But so this could very well be our very last show if the world ends next Saturday. Then we could go on record as this being the very last. They were joking about that on the the Golden Globes. That was the running joke that was going to be the last award show ever.
Right.
What do you think is going to happen come Friday?
I don't know. I'm not watching. I know that.
Yeah.
As much as it's kind of I don't know. It's kind of like a car crash. It's you want to watch, but you don't want to watch. You know what I mean? But I don't think I'm going to really watch. I'll hear about it on the news. How's that? I'm not going to watch it live.
Well, you know, the more we talk about this thing and the more it kind of comes out, you know, people living with HIV, we've been talking about this for weeks. If you are listening to this show or you listen to this show on podcast and you are living with HIV, you are impacted. And I think this is where the rubber's starting to meet the road because, you know, more than 22, 29 million people losing their health care, that people living with HIV, our care was rolled into the Affordable Care Act. And so this week, Senate leaders and the House took the first steps to repeal what has become known as Obamacare. They put forth a whole bunch of budget measures. So I think regardless of what happens on Friday, do I think the world's going to end? No. We're going to have to come out, let our voices be heard, because we're in for a long, rocky ride. Besides, allegedly, there was the first scandal with Donald Trump and some Russian prostitutes. I won't say anymore. You can look it up online.
Yeah. You're in for a rude awakening. I don't know. I guess, you know, maybe this will be, you know, we can look at it one way and maybe this presidency will help, you know, kickstart the activists to get a little bit more, you know, involved more and more, you know, loud and get more people to want to become involved because, you know, a lot of people have become kind of relaxed on it because with Obama, we have done so much and changed so many things that I guess some people were getting a little sort of, I want to say, complacent. You know what I mean? So maybe this will kind of light the fire under some people who have, you know, like myself, who kind of just relaxed for a couple of years. And, you know, maybe it's important that it shows people that their voice is needed and we need to continue to make noise and act up and fight for what we deserve, which is equal rights, not extra rights, Mr. Ben Carson.
Did you watch the Obama farewell from Chicago?
I watched part of it. I fell asleep.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was watching it and I kind of passed out. I had been working doubles all week, but I did watch it. And, you know, he's an amazing president. I love him and what he represents.
Yeah. I think when now we're starting to kind of, the shock is, I think for some people starting to settle in, but you really see over the last 8 years, it just hit me last night that I'm pretty liberal. And I don't know, I just was watching and yeah, I mean, you couldn't really help but get a little teary eyed that, you know, we've had so much diversity, so much, you know, kind of push forward and to now we're getting to where we have this demagogue being sworn in on Friday. But yeah, you keep late out or you keep early hours, so you go to bed fairly early.
I was like, I was fighting, you know what I mean, to watch it. And I even like, my partner had no desire to watch it. So I kind of was like, all right, let's just watch it. And then as soon as I passed out, I'm sure he turned it off and, you know, put on something that he wanted to watch. But I was upset that I missed
it.
I'm going to have to go on and watch the end of it. It was, I knew I missed the last like 10 minutes.
Well, if you really want to watch something, I mean, his speech was good, but then Lester Holt did a Dateline the special on him on Friday.
Okay.
And I would highly suggest that, you know, just very optimistic, very, you see, I don't know. It's not hard to see why he was elected. And why he was, you know, we believed in him. And the one line that he said from his farewell that just really brought it home is when he closed out, he said, "Yes, we can. Yes, we did. Yes, we can." And it shows the American, I mean, we as a people, we're really divided right now. And I don't know what the answer is, but there's just a lot of fear. I don't know where you're at, you know, what the kind of the feeling is, but I think nationwide,
It's just a fear that's very palpable, and nobody knows what quite's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's a divide within my, you know, own family of, you know, what we think is going to happen, or, you know, how one way that we feel about the situation. But, you know, I just kind of take it to make it my point to constantly show them that this is affecting me. You know what I mean? In a way that may not be affecting them and their individual families, but in the way that this is falling, you know, this could possibly really affect me. Like, the Affordable Care Act is Obamacare. You know what I mean? I even saw something on Facebook where somebody was, you know, excited, and I guess he was blasting excitement that it was going to be repealed, Obamacare, not realizing that him himself was on the Affordable Care Act, which was Obamacare. You know what I mean? So I've seen so many people who don't realize this, that it's the same thing. You know what I mean? Without without one is the other. You know, and I think I even saw when there was a town hall with Speaker Ryan, there was a gentleman who stood up who, you know, who talked about if Obamacare wasn't there and the Affordable Care Act and he didn't have, you know, the treatment for his cancer, he wouldn't be standing there today. You know what I mean? So this is life-saving, you know what I mean? This is saving people's lives. It's not just people just having insurance just for the sake of having insurance. You know what I mean? Well, it's a lot more than that. So I remind people that it is, you know, my issue and it's affecting me, but, you know, just think about it because I'm somebody that you love.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, listeners might be wondering, you know, what can they do? And everybody's kind of struggling to figure out what they can do. Well, if you're on Twitter or Facebook, our friend over at The Body, J.D. Davids, have put together Activist Basics. And you can go on there, and they have podcasts, and it's all sorts of things, whether you are a starting activist who, you know, this is day one for you, or you've been doing activism for a long time. They have all sorts of suggestions and resources and supports. So be sure to go on there and check that out, Activist Basics, and let them know that we sent you over there. But yeah, it's, we all have to lean on each other. Can't say that enough, really.
I totally agree with you. And, you know, that's what family's for. So let's take a moment now and hang out with our friend Josh Robbins for a minute.
This is your HIV Scoop with Josh Robbins, exclusive for Pause IM Radio. Buzzworthy HIV news in under 90 seconds. Here's Josh Robbins in this week's HIV Scoop.
Hello, guys. I'm Josh, and hope you're enjoying all of the joys and perils of living in 2017. This week, Charlie Sheen was back in the spotlight, this time with ABC's Michael Sam, interviewing Charlie about how he's doing, and Charlie talks about this new FDA clinical trial that he's a part of. Here's part of that interview.
How do you feel?
I feel really good.
Doing?
I feel really good.
I am so grateful. For 8 months now, I've been enrolled in an FDA study for a medication for a drug called Pro 140. That's in the late stages of its trial run. We are very close to being approved. And it is not this hideous cocktail that leads to so many side effects emotionally and physically. Mm-hmm. It's one shot a week. It's going well, and I feel like I'm carrying the torch for a lot of folks out there that are suffering from the same thing, you know.
Also, Charlie discussed something important and understood by many of us living with HIV, a feeling of depression and, in his case, potentially suicidal thoughts early after diagnosis.
In all of this that has happened, have there been a silver lining?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, the day I was diagnosed, I immediately wanted to eat a bullet. But my mom was there. I wouldn't do that in front of her or let her find me to clean up that mess. But then something else came over me, and they gave me a handful of pills and said, you can go home. So I'm so grateful for what was available when it happened, and even more grateful for what's available right now, and I'm in the middle of it, you know?
Good to hear Charlie is doing so well. The full interview's available at abcnews.com. I'm Josh Robbins, and this was your HIV Scoop.
Thanks, Josh, for that scoop. You know, I didn't actually see the interview. Did you, Aaron?
No, you know, I've seen that Charlie had done some other interviews, one in particular with Good Morning America, and I heard that he was on that study, on that drug study. So I'm glad to hear that he's doing well.
Yeah, I'm actually. Well, I've never really watched, you know, any of his shows or was a huge fan of his work, but, you know, to go from Mr. Meltdown, because he was, you know, hashtag winning and going really through it, that was when he was received his diagnosis, and to actually be where he is now, and like you said, to go through that stage of depression and wanting to commit suicide and having those thoughts and not knowing, you know, that's common for people who are newly diagnosed. So him opening up and sharing that, I applaud him being so, you know, open and honest about it.
Right. And the study that he's on, I mean, is very interesting. The long-acting injectables, that's the trend of how we're moving forward. So it's good to hear that he's having good results. You know, we kind of talked about that on last week's show about, you know, these different deliverables. The one we talked about last week was a year-long implant. And so all these different delivery methods are really improving.
It's very scary. Very, very scary. But anyway, let's move on to today's guest. Our guest today is Robert Suttle. He is the assistant director of the Zero Project, the network for people living with HIV and allies fighting for freedom from stigma and injustice. He oversees the community outreach and education and coordinates Zero's HIV Criminalization Survivors Network. Please help us welcome our friend, Robert Suttle. Welcome, Robert.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, depending on what time zone you're in.
Hey, guys. So good to finally talk to you again. Yeah, it is afternoon here. Where are you?
Wow. I'm in New York right now.
Okay. So you're in New York.
Yes.
That's nice. So how have you been?
I've been all right, just living life and having many different experiences, but still on the up and up. I am feeling really good and just ready to get through this year with whatever it holds before it. So, but I am feeling really good. I think I am in such a much better space than I've been in a while. Last year, which everyone can attest for themselves, was just a really challenging year, and for me personally, as well as the things that were going on, publicly in the world. So, but I'm good. I'm happy to be talking to you guys. It's been a long time.
It has been. I saw that you were over in KC for New Year's, and I was hoping to, around the New Year, I was hoping to get over there and see you over there at, you were with KC Care, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a very good event. I was invited to come and speak as a keynote speaker for the World AIDS Day breakfast, which was hosted by our organization there. And forgive me for not remembering the organization. I don't want to get the name wrong. I think it's Calvary Community Network. So they welcomed me with, it was just a really nice experience. And I was really am glad to be able to have that moment to just share for World AIDS Day, a message about myself, a message about HIV criminalization and how it affects people living with HIV. So hopefully that brought in some new perspective. And hopefully raise some awareness for people who otherwise didn't know about it. And so, and then also the same day, I went down to Louisiana, to Lake Charles. Louisiana is my home state, but Lake Charles is not where I'm from. I'm from Shreveport, which is 3 hours northwest of the state. And I also delivered a keynote address there as well for where I stayed. So it was really nice experience. I went to give, and I feel like I was given so much back when they honored me with an award and just recognition for what I'm doing. So it really, hit home for me, especially being back in Louisiana and at least where my, you know, experience happened. And so it was really nice. I'll never forget it. I would say that. So yeah, I was kind of busy. So after that, I just wanted to rest. Enjoy the rest of the year, holiday season, and now I'm back and ready to move forward.
That, correct me if I'm wrong, did you receive the key to the city when you were down in Louisiana?
Yeah, the mayor of Lake Charles surprised me, actually. I was not expecting that, and obviously it was kept a secret from me. And yeah, I was presented with the key to the city. I'm still in shocked about that, but yeah, it's really nice. It's really nice.
That is awesome.
Yeah. That is awesome. So Robert, I'm so excited to be talking to you. You know, I've been out for a while, haven't been really involved. So to reconnect with you and have you come on, you know, the last time we spoke to you was 3 years ago. Me and Aaron sat down and spoke to you, and Tammy is actually when it was. I just looked it up before we came on.
That's right.
Some people who may not, right, it's been forever. So you're one of the people that I miss seeing out there on the front lines when I go to the conferences and stuff. So I'm excited to get back out there and see you in the circles. For people who aren't familiar with you, can we just back up a little bit and kind of give people a little backstory of where you came from and how you kind of got involved with the Sarah Project?
Yeah, and I can do it pretty quickly. I am originally from Louisiana. I was someone who was diagnosed with HIV back in 2003. And so this year will make, 14 years? Yeah, about 14 years. And so, I want to say 5 or 6 years into my diagnosis, I, like everybody else, you know, you live your life. You, as a person living with HIV, I was never involved in any type of advocacy whatsoever related to HIV. I was working in the court system, and so I was just on that track of becoming this professional in the legal world. And unfortunately, I was involved in a casual relationship with a guy who pressed charges against me for failing to disclose my status to him, allegedly. So as a result of that, I was convicted of intentional exposure to the AIDS virus, which is a felony conviction in the state of Louisiana. I was sentenced to 6 months in South Louisiana prison, and I had to register as a sex offender for 15 years. And so coming out of prison, I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. I didn't know how I was going to move forward, because having a conviction, especially living in the South, is really hard to get a job or even have stable housing and that sort of thing. But thank God I had family there, and thankfully I was able to secure a job through volunteering, because I decided to volunteer for an organization, and eventually that volunteer opportunity turned into an employment opportunity. And at the same time, I was also learning more about the HIV criminalization work that had been going on. And that was kind of the early periods of the HIV criminalization movement. So I guess you could say I came in right at a good time, because they had always been talking about HIV criminalization, but they never really connected with anyone who's actually and personally experienced it. And so as a result, I left the job that I had back home, and I decided to take a chance and get involved with my colleague, Sean Strood, who we together developed the Sarah Project, which is a network of people living with HIV and allies fighting for freedom against stigma and injustice. And I've been assistant director of CERO since its beginnings in 2012. And so here we are, going on five years later, and we're still relevant, still going strong. And so I think I did good to accept the proposal to, you know, start this organization and to do this work. And it's really been a great experience for me to share personally, but also to educate many, many people about the issue who otherwise wouldn't have known about it.
No, I think it's incredible work that you guys are doing. Go ahead, Aaron. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to, and this might be a little bit, you know, later in the conversation. We were just talking about how, you know, we're less than, you know, 6 days from, you know, the changing the guard, if you will, with the new administration. We now have GOP that is running not only many states, but now definitely the national government. In this new era, what does the work that CERO and that you're doing, what does that look like? You know, what are you anticipating that will look like with this new administration?
I'm glad you brought that question up, because I think many people have that question as to what does HIV criminalization look like going forward into this sort of Trump administration. Honestly, for our work, I don't think anything really changes. If anything, I think it just creates a sense of urgency even more, that we need to continue to do what we're doing, but maybe step it up, whatever that means. meaning, you know, just be more aggressive and more assertive in our approach to strategizing and organizing. And I think, if anything, the Trump administration would just lead us to organize more effectively, you know, becoming stronger and smarter about our approach, our approaches to addressing legislators or other policies, whether it's on the state level or the federal level. I mean, of course, it's real early to see how those things are going to, how it's going to play out. But if anything, we should be organizing more and just developing better and stronger, smarter strategies now that we understand what we're up against in regards to, you know, policies, conservative policies that will block our progress or that could be barriers to blocking our progress or our approach moving forward. So I don't expect it to be any different. It's just that we have to be smarter and just work twice as hard and just be smart about it.
Awesome.
And I will just say that, you know, on the, another point of it or perspective is that, you know, it could be that, Trump administration talks about the law and order. And so most states and probably governors and such, they're all about law and order, which I don't think we need more law and order. We need to have clear and better understanding of how the impact the policies have now, and such as around policing and things like that. And so if anything, that kind of stuff could get worse, that maybe more people, you may see a spike in the number of people who are prosecuted these days. But again, we have to see how that plays out. But we are going to be operating under a system that's going to be just even more oppressive. And so that's why I say we have to organize better, be smarter, and more strategic about what we do.
Now, Robert, one of the things that I'm familiar with is some of the stories that, you know, involved HIV criminalization a few years ago, like Nick and Monique and yourself, and ones that were involved in the HIV It's Not a Crime series and things like that. Are there still, I guess I want to say, cases that are hitting the headlines now? Because I don't see too much of it online, but is it still something that is going on, you know what I mean? Or is it something that kind of has really taken the back burner? Like, how, you know what I mean? Like, is this still happening? Because I'm wondering, because people aren't seeing it, and then, you know, so I just want to know, is it still something that is going on in the world today that, you know, where people, I'm just trying to see, like, recent stories I want to know, like, of headlines that maybe.
Right. That's a good question, because I have not really seen many myself across my Facebook timeline or any news feed. You know, whether it's still happening, I'm sure it is. I have to keep in mind that a lot of these cases are not reported. And there are some that are reported, but that doesn't mean that they're not happening. And as far as I'm concerned, the laws are still on the books across the country in different states. So that's one indicator that it's not going away. But in terms of reporting, I've not seen many, but I don't think this is unusual. I would like to say it's because of our awareness and advocacy that, you know, perhaps that's not why we're seeing many, and maybe people are thinking twice or whatever. I want to say that, but that may not, you know, be right or factual. But I think it's just that they're just not reported. And, but again, if they're not reported, then we don't know where it's happening and that sort of deal. But I think this is not unusual, because I've sort of seen how it sort of the rise and the fall in terms of how the stories that get out there. And so this just may be one of those down periods right now. But again, any story can pop up in any moment. But of course, one story that we're all familiar with is that we've all been watching across the country and maybe even the world is the Michael Johnson case out of Missouri. So that seems to be the only case that I am aware of. But I think through our Ciro listserv, I think there may have been a few instances where people have reached out. But we get those too, where people reach out and then we'll respond back and you know, asking for more information as to how we can help them, or in what direction we can go with providing support and services. And then we don't hear back from people. So I don't know if maybe some of those are possibly false alarms or whatever. But yes, they're still happening. It's just they're not reported. But at this point, the only case that I know that really stands out is, of course, the Michael Johnson issue.
Now, what tell us about that, because I'm not 100% familiar with that situation. I've seen it on my headlines, but I haven't really gotten the details. Are you familiar with the details of that case? Or
I can't say that I'm familiar with all the details of the case. I mean, it's a very lengthy case. I would say I would point people to thebody.com. Apparently, they did a information on the recent development, and it's pretty much a fact sheet and a case timeline, which is what's developed by the Center for HIV Law and Policy. And it was just published on thebody.com's website as of January 11th. So that was about 4 days ago. And it lists all the recent developments from what happened just recently all the way down to giving you background about Michael Johnson, about the trial back in May 2015, and that sort of deal. But the latest is that Michael's case was, his decision was reversed the decision on his conviction was reversed. And as a result, he's given the options of possibly a new trial on the technicality that the prosecution delayed disclosing evidence that they had that did not allow the defense the opportunity to prepare, where put the defense at a disadvantage because they weren't aware of the evidence that was being withheld by the prosecution. And so, and that's just me sort of summarizing right there. But now the state has so many days to file a motion to the Missouri Court of Appeals asking them to either reconsider the case or have the case tried before a full panel of the court, because there were three judges that decided this decision of overturning the lower court's decision. And then the other option was to either transfer the case to the Missouri Supreme Court. And so it's up to the court to decide how they, you know, what decision that they make. I mean, they can deny all three of those options and have the case sent back to the trial court. And so that would mean having a retrial and going from there. So it's still up to the court's decision. I mean, the appeals court could also overturn their own decision and have Michael's conviction reinstated. So there's, you know, different avenues here that can be taken. And I think we're all just going to be sitting back and seeing which way does the court decide, since they overturned the conviction, and we're waiting to see what decision they make on the state's motion to reconsider the decision. And so what that means is that Michael, you know, he has opportunity for a new trial. Currently, he's still incarcerated in one of the state prisons. And so eventually, if he does go to new trial, I'm sure they're going to send him back to the county in which he was being tried in initially. And so the process would sort of start back over. We would hope that, I mean, he's been in prison, from my understanding, for at least 3 years now, which is a long time. And, you know, advocates on the ground are strategizing, trying to figure out ways to support him and ways to just bring some awareness to his, you know, to his case at this point, with the hopes that he could be let out, you know, and have time served or whatever. So, I mean, his opportunities are looking really slim at the moment, but having his conviction overturned, I mean, I felt was a great victory. And I applaud the appeals court for acknowledging this technicality that the prosecution did. But what's unfortunate is that they only looked at the technicality of what the prosecution holding back evidence, but they didn't look at the fact of what got Michael convicted, you know, racism, homophobia, how people feel about HIV, and how the people, the jury of those people who convicted him felt about, you know, blackness or black people, because that's really what should, you know, be on trial here. But the court only looked at that issue, but they did not And there's another point that the court did not consider how unconstitutional their law is. They didn't consider that whatsoever. So they only made a decision about the prosecution's actions, but they did not consider the other point that was raised on appeal, which was about the unconstitutionality of and the unfairness of Michael being convicted and sentenced. So that's what's unfortunate, because the court should have, at least I feel, should have, we would want them to address how oppressive that sentence is. And Michael got 30 and a half years. That's a long time.
One of the
it's excessive.
Yeah, one of the things that the listeners may not be aware of is that the work of CERO is supported in some part by the Eltonon AIDS Foundation. And that's really allowed you all to really put boots on the ground in different key states. Tammy Haught, many people will know Tammy from HIV is Not a Crime conference and from social media presence. Can you talk a little bit about, during the last couple of years, how has CERO kind of expanded to really, meet the growing changes in the, policy landscape that you're working in?
Yeah, that's a great question. CERO, in the beginning, we had stories. We had real people who've experienced prosecution and had been convicted, over these HIV-specific statutes. And so I think that is what just shook things up. It really put this issue in front of people's faces, and it humanized it. They saw that we were people just like them. It wasn't like we were, thugs or whatever people may view a criminal to be. And so I think that is the gift that CERO presented in this work or this movement, is that we were able to connect with those people, including myself, to be one of those people that people could touch and hear and listen to. And as a result of that, we've been fortunate, with the help of the Positive Women's Network and other advocates across the country, to establish the HIV is Not a Crime Conference. We did the first one in 2014 in Grinnell, Iowa, and brought over, over 100 or plus advocates at that time. And so from different states to learn strategies, training, and education on how to address HIV criminalization, and then take all that knowledge back to their state and figure out how to strategize based on their political climate in their state. And then we were able to host the conference last year in Huntsville, Alabama, and sort of expanded the conference on HIV, but also to addressing racial and social injustice and economic injustice and Blackness and anti-Blackness and that sort of thing. And so we were able to bring in other, more people who are doing work in other areas, and it's outside of HIV, but just in other criminal justice issues together. And so it turned out to be a great event. I think we had over nearly 300 people. So that's huge compared to what we did in 2014. And we're currently in the process of planning or pre-planning for another conference next year for 2018. So we're looking forward to having more of these conferences and these gatherings, because this has really built the momentum as far as more people getting involved. And I think people are excited about it. And I think HIV criminalization now has become one of those top priorities for all the different communities, especially within HIV and within the policy world, because we've seen many changes from the HIV criminalization being mentioned in the National HIV AIDS Strategy, as well as Department of Justice, and producing these best practices guidelines around HIV criminalization, and the many, many, many resolutions that have been passed by all the medical associations, medical associations condemning HIV criminalization, from public health The movement has come a long way since just 5 or 6 years ago. So I anticipate that we will continue to move forward, and hopefully change will come, because we've seen it happen, you know, in Iowa and Colorado. So it's something that we'll forever be, you know, in a battle with, but you have to have patience and hang in there and press forward. So Ciro has been really instrumental in that, and I'm really proud to be part of something like this. And I'm glad we did it. And I think many people appreciate what we've done, and we're grateful for their support and grateful for their work, you know, and what they're doing in their state, because it's really us as the people together that is making the difference. And Ciro was just there to sort of facilitate and get it started. But we have been instrumental in helping states develop strategic planning plans to how to address the laws in their state. We don't lead them in terms of saying you need to do this, you need to do that. It really comes from the people in that state, because we as a national organization, we don't understand fully the political climate that exists in these states. So we really depend on the people there on the ground who know about that, has, and leave it up to them as to how they should organize. And we're just there to support their efforts and just give guidance. But it's really led by the people there in that state, and particularly people living with HIV, as well as their allies that exist.
There's one brochure that you have, Robert, that I've always really appreciated. And the one common thing that people reach out to me, I've had a couple of viewers or people close to me who, you know, have found themselves in situations where they themselves are facing prosecution or they're being questioned. And you have on your trifold, you have what to do if you find yourself in one of those situations. Can you kind of just go over with our listeners, you know, best practices for how, you know, if our listeners find themselves in a situation where they're being, you know, whatever the situation might be, if maybe they came out of a relationship, or if they're being questioned by police, or someone accuses them, what are the best practices for handling that situation and not, you know, getting themselves into more trouble before it ever even starts?
Yeah, that's a great question, because people still, I've gotten many people that have shared, you know, that this happened to them, or that they know someone who sort of went through that. You know, the best thing, I mean, always the best thing, if you can be upfront about your status, you know, do that. But we all know the reality is that we can't always do that. It's not always safe to do that. Because people can hurt you, especially if they can't handle whatever that information is, you know, around HIV. And to me, I feel like it's only because of people's own personal relationship with HIV as to why they either become violent or they choose to have you arrested. And I think it's because they've not come to terms with their own relationship with HIV and how they see it. But what people can do, you know, we know that they're either one disgruntled ex away from being accused of not disclosing or, you know, having a slight encounter with law enforcement, you know, is another way that people can find themselves being in this situation. But, you know, the thing is that it's understanding your rights, you know, as a person living with HIV, understanding when and how to disclose your status, which is never easy. And knowing that, you know, you don't always have to disclose your status in certain situations. But when it comes to sexual, you know, situations, that, you know, I think it's important that if you can either have an open discussion about it, in ways that they're either the third party involved, such as a doctor or a case manager or a friend or somebody that can be a witness to the fact of you, you know, having shared or disclosed your status to someone. You can always get it documented through text messaging or even video recording now these days. You can do that. But the thing is, when people are in heated sexual, you know, moments. I mean, the idea of either signing a piece of paper or some type of acknowledgement form, I mean, that stuff doesn't really happen. And it doesn't even happen, you know, it's not like we're sitting here about to engage, you know, intimately, and it's like, well, let me record this, you know, but no one thinks about that. But, you know, those are things that you can do, you know, to sort of document that you have disclosed, because it's hard to prove that whether you did or didn't if someone's saying that you didn't, that you, I guess, purposely exposed them to HIV or intentionally meaning to do it. So, of course, the opposite side of that is that, you know, these things can also support the fact that you are, in fact, HIV positive. If they're in the court of law, if they can't seem to find proof that you are HIV positive, that those things can also be used against you. But I think it's best to just pull out all the stops that you can to show that you have acknowledged your HIV diagnosis. But if you're in a situation where, you know, you're being sort of, it's been held over your head, you know, the best thing you can try to do is either talk about it, talk it over with this person, because a lot of times people act in the heat of the moment and out of anger, out of spite or whatever. And sometimes they just need some time to cool down. And because the thing is that many people don't understand the far reach that it has when you accuse someone of not disclosing their status, that it has way more severe consequences than a person could ever think. And that could be for the rest of their lives. And so I think most people don't want to see people punished severely in that kind of way. But again, they don't understand, you know, how difficult it is when you're faced, when a person is being accused. And so that's why we have to be careful about when we start, one has to be careful when they go to that level of accusing someone. Because depending on how people's relationship is with HIV, I mean, it could go so many different ways. And we've had people murdered. We have people who, again, been prosecuted. And then if you're not either of those, somewhere in the middle, you're being harassed. And I just think that has to change. Like, we really have to change. And, you know, many people say, well, it's 2017 now. Well, yeah, that is true. But folks need to get educated. And the more education, the more knowledge you have about something, the less fearful you can be about it. So
I totally agree with you, Robert. Knowledge is power. You know, let me ask you this. Is there the biggest question is where can people go and find information on their specific state, where they live, to find what the laws are in their state? Is there a website or somewhere where they can go find that information?
Yes, you can always come to the Cyril Project, cyrilproject.com. We have just updated our website, actually, and we're still updating it as we go along. So there's a map there in the middle of our page, and I'm clicking on it now just to make sure that it's all working. And so it lists all the different statutes. I'm sorry? Oh, I thought someone was having a question. So that's one source. You can also go to the Center for HIV Law and Policy website. They have a comprehensive resource there that lists all the states, as well as gives you sort of an analysis of different cases and how either the law was applied in certain situations. And so so between the CERO website, as well as the Center for HIV Law and Policy's website, where they have all, you can find it, says, state laws or something like that on their page. And it's real helpful. It's a manual that you also can download as a PDF. And so it's very lengthy, very lengthy, but you can you can also, you know, download the PDF and then just print out your information on your state. And so, and of course, if you can't find that information, you can feel free to reach out to Cyril at info@cyrilproject.com. And we're happy to direct you to these resources and help you get what you need.
Okay, Robert, I want to also share your information where people can contact you, whether you're on Twitter, Facebook, wherever you would like people to reach out and reach you personally, whether it's for speaking engagements or just to be your friend. Where can they find you?
Yeah. You can find me on Facebook under Robert Suttle. Twitter, I am I_Suttle. I_Suttle. And you can, I guess, also follow me on Instagram at Suttle Vision. I don't pretty much use my Instagram for advocacy. It's more just my personal, but people still follow me on there, and that's not a problem whatsoever. So I'm always happy to have a conversation about HIV, HIV criminalization, or anything about Black gay men, or just anything political. Like, I'm just here for all the social issues. You know, I believe in social justice passionately. So I have a lot of interest in a lot of different things as far as policies and issues are concerned. And so you can follow Cyril on Facebook, the Cyril Project, Cyril Project on Twitter, and we're also on Instagram under Cyril. And we also have a page called HIV is Not a Crime, which is what a Facebook page called HIV is Not a Crime. And you can follow there to get many updates on the conference planning, any updates that are going on that are, you know, related to HIV criminalization. And so we have many followers on there. And we're also, again, as I said, planning for the new conference for 2018. And so there's HIV is Not a Crime Training Academy introductory webinar that's going to be happening on February 9th. And that's at 3:30 p.m. Eastern, 2:30 p.m. Central Time, 1:30 p.m. Mountain Time, and 12:30 Pacific Time. And you can register and be a part of that webinar. And there you can also understand all the different working groups that you can join and get involved. If you're looking for a way to get involved in this issue, this is a great opportunity. And if you get signed in now, then you'll be more aware of certain dates and things that are going to be happening so that you can know when that date is. We don't know where the venue is right now. We don't even know the specific date of the conference, but we are starting the pre-planning, because to get those things, the dates and the places where it's going to happen, it's part of the pre-planning, it's part of the working group planning. And so if you get in now, this is a great opportunity. I mean, this is the time to join, and so that you'll be in the know. So we were in the South last year, so who knows? We were in Iowa 2014, so I'm not sure what region of the country we'll be in this year, but we'll see.
Cool. Well, Robert, thank you so much for coming on and sharing, you know, your story and an update with us about the Cyril Project and what's going on. I look forward to seeing you and hearing more things about you online. And I'm so glad that you joined us today. I'm excited that we got to sit down and talk with you.
Yeah. And thank you all so much for using this platform to educate people about, you know, a series of different things. And that's what's important. I think in the times that we're going to be living in the next 4 years, that we all have to be vigilant. We all have to be mindful of what's going on, because you don't know what's coming around the corner. And so we definitely have to pay attention. And I appreciate you guys for using your platform to bring awareness to HIV, HIV criminalization, and a lot of host of other things that, you know, that affect us as a people. So thank you.
Thanks, Robert.
Have yourself a great day. All right. Well, let's move on to our positive message from Rise Up to HIV. And actually, you know what? Let's just say our goodbyes now, because then we'll end off after that. So I want to thank Robert and the Cyril Project for hanging out with us this week. It's kind of a very important information that needs to be shared. So I'm glad that Robert's involved and that, you know, he was a part of it. And Aaron, I'm glad that you were with me this week.
I was glad to be with you, too. Buy all your groceries, stay indoors on Friday. If you're Catholic, pray the rosary, whatever you do. Hopefully we
That's
make it
right.
Through.
Right. And next week, we have the pleasure of speaking with our friend here at PosIM Radio. His name is Joey. So I'm excited to be speaking with him. He will be joining us the 22nd, Joseph Gray. He is going to talk about what it's like to go from addict to activist. So join us next week, 2 p.m., same time, same place.
Hey, everyone. It's your favorite Positive Marine here with my take on HIV. I was diagnosed with HIV in May of 2012, And in the beginning stages of my diagnosis, I was afraid. I was afraid that I would lose my career. I was afraid of how others would treat me. And I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to live a healthy life. I think that most people have this fear when they are first diagnosed. But through education, I was able to break through my fear and realize that I could live a perfectly normal life just like anybody else. Through my advocacy and my outreach, I have been able to meet many wonderful people who became a great support group for me. With them at my side, I have been able to broaden my network of support to many others who are going through the same thing. I want everybody in our community of HIV-positive individuals to know that it is going to be okay. We will survive, and through education and outreach, we will be able to make a better life for us all.
Hi, I was diagnosed in March of 1990, 3 months shy of my 21st birthday. When I went to see the doctor, he told me that my viral load was up in the millions and that my CD4 count was less than 200. Basically gave me 5 years to live. At this time, I basically gave up all my dreams, my hopes, and the wanting to live. But fortunately, here I am, 26 years later, I'm very healthy. So my message to you guys is to never give up, never give hope, and to keep up the fight. Yo fui diagnosticado en marzo de 1990, 3 meses antes de mi 21 cumpleaños. En este momento el doctor me dijo que yo tenía el viral load en los millones y el CD4 menos de 200. Me dio 5 años de vida. En este momento yo me di por vencido y no quise hacer más por mi vida, pero aquí estoy 26 años después y mi mensaje es que nunca pierdan el deseo de vivir, ¿ok? Sigan la pelea.
Thank you for joining us for Paz IM. You can listen to us each and every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we bring you your weekly dose of hope. Join in the conversation on social media, Paz IM Radio and at Aaron Laxton. And while you're on there, check out I'm Still Josh as he brings the HIV Scoop of the Week. Also, if you've not checked out the positive message campaign from Rise Up to HIV, be sure to do so. For all of you who contribute and make this show possible, thank you so very much. If you think you have a story that needs to be covered or you would like to come on air and talk to Robert and myself, please let us know. We want to bring content that you need and that you want. Be sure to download this episode on iTunes and past episodes. We'd love to hear your feedback. From all of us over here at Paz IM Radio, from Robert Brining and myself, have a safe and healthy week. And until we speak again, stay positive.